The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on February 23, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all on this bright, cheery day. I think it's going to be pretty warm today, so at least for this time of year, which is nice, since we've had quite a cold spell. Well, this morning, I thought I'd talk about, I came upon a poem recently in a book, I forget the title now, I think it was just Zen Poetry or something like that. Anyway, the title of this poem kind of grabbed me. It's called Bad Government. And I thought maybe, well, after reading it, I thought maybe there's something I can say from this poem. So let me just read the poem first. Bad Government. Sleet and rain, as if the pot were boiling. Winds whack like the crack of an axe. As an old man, an old, old man, at sunset, crept into my hut. He sighed as if to himself, these rulers, so cruel. Why? Tell me why must they steal till we starve? Then slice the skin from our bones? For a song from some beauty, they'll go back on sworn words. For a song from some tart, they'll tear down our huts. For a sweet song or two, they'll slaughter 10,000 like me, like you. Weep as you will. Let your whole clan go hungry. No good wind will blow. No gentle breeze begin again. Lord Locust Plague and Baron Bandit Bug, one east, one west, one north, one south, we're surrounded. So that's by Quan Tzu. This was written more than 1,000 years ago in China, on the other side of the globe, from where we sit here. Isn't it very much like, well, things today, or maybe very much like things haven't changed that much? Let's look at this again. Sleet and rain as if the pot were boiling. Sleet and rain. It's like maybe someone says later, they tear down our huts. With no hut, yeah, there you are with your pot out in the woods or wherever, with no shelter, and it's raining, the fire's out. It's like the pot filling with rainwater, it's like it's boiling. Kind of an image like that. Winds whack like the crack of an axe. As an old, old man, at sunset, crept into my hut. He sighed as if to himself, these rulers, so cruel. Why? Tell me why must they steal till we starve and slice the skin from our bones? For a song from some beauty, they'll go back on sworn words. Maybe get a little bit of flattery, a little song from, and whatever it is that you may have promised to whomever, that doesn't count for anything anymore. You just go back on what you've said, and it's not even a problem for you. Just go back on it. Who cares? I don't even remember, really. Did I make that promise? I don't know. But in this moment, when there's maybe a little bit of flattery, you know, coming your way, or from a song from some tart, they'll tear down our huts. Here we are with our pot out in the woods, as if it's boiling, yet it's just rain pouring into the pot. And we're starving. My whole family is starving. Where are the leaders? They don't care. They just want some flattery, some recognition, some people paying attention. And with a little bit of promise for that sort of thing, they'll go back on their word, even disrupt your life, take away your employment, cause all kinds of disruption. It doesn't matter to them. It's a sign of their power, their ability just to do this. And they don't care. They don't care about you. They'll slaughter 10,000 like me, like you. He says, weep as you will. Yeah, they'll let your whole clan go hungry. What's it to them? No good will blow, no gentle breeze begin again. 1,000 years ago this was written. Could have been written today by many people around the globe. Have we learned anything? Have we changed? Have we matured in some way as a society, as many societies coming together, cooperating, working together? Have we learned any lessons? Then he says, Lord, locust plague and barren bandit bug. One east, one west, one north, one south. We're surrounded. Yeah. So these times, when you read this, when I first read it, yeah, it was echoes of things so long ago, a different time, different place. So different from right here. But as I sat and kind of pictured where how this was being written, where, and who was writing it, and what they were experiencing. And then just reflecting on what we experience today in the world, we feel like we've advanced in so many ways. But also we've advanced in our weaponry, and all of this sort of thing. We've advanced, we could say advanced, is that advancing? I don't know. We'll become more sophisticated. Our society is more complex and spread throughout the whole world now. We cover the globe, really, and even beyond the globe. So we've become very powerful. But have we really changed in any way where it, can we say, where it really matters? You can just think about this. And if we feel like we need to mature or to change in some way, how will we do it? And are we going to do it collectively as societies? Or maybe universally, where we all come together in various cultures and languages, and you know, we speak, and the way we think resulting from the way we speak. And all of this. Come together and cooperate. Get along. I was wondering what to call this talk. And when I realized I wasn't sure if I wanted to give a talk like this. But I thought maybe I should, really. And using this poem that was given the title, it has the title here, Bad Government. I don't know if Quan Tzu, I don't know if he would have given it that title necessarily. But that's the title it had in the book. J.P. Seaton is a translator. But here's the title, Bad Government. And I thought, well, would I title my talk Bad Government? I don't think so. Maybe nobody would really want to listen. I don't know, maybe today people would want to listen. But what? Good government? Talk about that, how it might contrast with what we read here. This thing about good or bad. Good and evil. Hasn't this been kind of a plague for us, Lord, locust plague here. Hasn't this plagued us since as far back as we can reflect, remember? We go back to, well, just look at our morality that had been developed in various ways. There are various cultures, various times, various religions. Have we cured this problem here that we have with good and evil? And what is good? It's so easy for us to say, well, good is what's been written down. By what sources? Well, there's all kinds of sources. And maybe in general, in very general ways, we can agree on much of what we might call good. But remember the wise Chinese farmer who points out, well, who can say what's good or bad? But in our immediate experience, yeah, we can point to all kinds of things that I think are good or would be good if we could do this. And watch now how you're acting in regards to this. Because you might not notice, maybe you're doing some things that others might feel are bad, even if you're doing it in a very calm and thoughtful way, with a sincere heart that you want to do good. Still, there might be others who don't see that as good, or might even, you know, suffer the impact of that. Is this any different than the barren bandit bug who acts in a way that, they want what's good too, but of course their focus is just on me. What's good for me, or maybe good for my clan, or something like this. Not really taking into account the whole, everything. So I don't know whether, if I call this good government, can I really say anything there? What about enlightened government? Would that work? Well, you know, strictly speaking, there's no such thing as enlightened government. How could there be? What does it mean to govern, right? To control, to steer things in various directions? And of course, with the idea that it would be good if we could do good things. But again, what exactly are these good things? Where's the foundation of morality, the basis of morality? Is it in doing good? Again, there's confusion there. There will be, sooner or later, what is good? And we come together in groups and try to do something about that. Sometimes we do horrendous things. Other times, yeah, we do a lot of good in the world. Well, we do a lot of what? Well, maybe helping people not to starve, not to kill each other, not to be sickened by various diseases that we haven't been handling very well, and all sorts of things. So this is all very, very complicated. And how can you ever get to a point where you know you're doing the right thing, so to speak? Ultimately, that you truly are doing the good thing. And we can point to barren bandit bug and where the Lord locust plague and say, well, clearly these are not good things. Yeah. Yeah, what is it about them that we feel that way? Well, this is bad government, the way they're conducting things. You're here today, too. Not just these ancients or these imagined people that we put titles to or names to here. But right now in our own times, our own societies, what does it mean now then to do? Is it good that we really need to focus on here? When, if we look carefully, you will see that in the end, yeah, maybe large swaths of us can agree this is a good thing. But then how to go about the way we're going to bring this along? We'll start fighting about that. And there's others who just outright, no, they don't, no, that's not good in the first place. I mean, this is where we are as human beings. And this is where the problem is. And this is why after 1,000 years, or how many thousands of years, we're still creating this kind of difficulty for ourselves. And what do we do about it? Some of us just want to give up. Others, yeah, we don't want to sacrifice my good station in life here, so I won't speak out against it. It's just endless with us. And this stuff just keeps repeating and keeps repeating. And he says we're surrounded, you know, in the end here. It's on the north, the south, the east, the west. We're surrounded. There seems to be no way out of this kind of situation for us human beings. With our powerful minds, our intellects, our ability to abstract and conceptualize our experience and use that to control all sorts of things, or to even set up things that eventually themselves may seem to control other things for us, until they go out of control and we don't know how to control. It's just endless with us. And of course, we want to improve things, and we have improved things. Have we improved things? Are we better off in our personal lives than maybe people who lived thousands of years ago, or perhaps in more simple societies or whatever? We have people today, at least, well, until recently, I don't know what's going on there now, and it's Bhutan, I think, isn't it? Where, you know, their focus was on the national
gross national
happiness. Yes, people really focused on that, and perhaps basically they probably were pretty happy. Here we are in a relatively affluent society here. How happy are we? You find people perhaps today, you know, in simpler societies, and maybe they're happier. Don't have all the technical advantages that we have and that sort of thing, which really makes our lives very complicated. And in many ways where we become maybe driven and or frightened and, you know, in all sorts of ways. So where are we with this? An enlightened government, then? Can we create an enlightened government to govern us then in a way that what makes us enlightened, or act as if we were enlightened, or really tune into what the enlightened, how they would act, as if there are rules for this that we could write down and allow them to govern us? Well, it's like here in this country, and I think it's pretty good. I don't mean to knock this, but of course we have the U.S. Constitution, which is, when somebody, a famous line by Ben Franklin, I might botch it here, but it was something like somebody after they had hammered out our Constitution, and somebody asked Ben Franklin, well, what kind of government do we have? And he says, we have a democratic republic. I think is how he described it. But then he said, if you can keep it. And it would seem like we've kept it now for well over 200 years now, but have we? And even if we had, how well would that work? I'm not knocking this. I think that's a pretty good way to go. But how are you going to carry it out? How are you going to keep it? So again, these are complexities. And so should we instead have an enlightened government? Yeah. But I defy you to tell me what that would be. There's no such, because with that, we don't understand the enlightened. Those of us who may wake up to what's really the real nature of this reality that we live in, that we find ourselves in. And with that, could we devise a government that runs on it? No, you can't, because it isn't running on any particular principle in the end. Something you can identify and name. and say, well, this is it. And this is really the source of the law. This is we don't have to make up something like an overarching powerful being above or wherever that's controlling everything, and we should obey those rules that are written down in books. No, well, if we want to go with what the enlightened are saying, well, I don't think they can write it down, what it is that they see or know or realize. Turns out, though, I can tell you this, that what it is that they see and know and realize, you do too, right now, even as you sit here. It is not something mysterious or something we need to figure out. You don't need to figure that out any more than you need to figure out the taste of orange juice, you know, from a description of it, or following the laws and the rules as to what that is. You know what it is that you know now. What it is that you can know. And everything that you can know, you know now. What's the problem? And we want to develop our knowledge in various ways. We create theories and schools and thought and various things. And this is all very valuable and good. I'm not knocking any of this. It could be used for good or ill in our conventional way of looking at things, all of that. But in terms of finally resolving what's truly vexing us, what's truly difficult for us, what causes the pain and the misery and the confusion that we bear every day, and the fears, and the, you know, well, where do we go after we die? What about my loved ones who passed on? It's endless, the things that can vex us. What is the cure for this? Is there such? Yes, there is. Actually, I don't know if I'd call it a cure exactly, but we can bring this to an end. This kind of suffering, this is dukkha. This is dukkha. A dukkha of, well, for confused existence. So what is it about the awakened? How might they differ from our understanding or our view, our everyday view, or in our exchanges with each other, and how we might talk to each other, the ideas we might give each other, or take from each other, fight with each other about, or band together in some happy way. Is there anything different with them? Well, in a way, no, because, again, as I said, they don't see anything that you don't see. Well, you do see it, but they're noticing something that the rest of us don't pay attention to. And even when it is pointed out, because I have pointed it out to many of you for many years, and I continue to point it out in all kinds of ways. But in a nutshell, what it is with the awakened, they never lose sight of the whole. They never lose sight of the whole. When I say they never lose sight of the whole, I don't mean that they see it like a physical kind of seeing of an object or something like that, because the whole isn't an object. How could it be? Were it to be an object, you'd have to get outside of it to see it. But then it's not the whole, because you're outside of it. That's the nature of the world that we live in here. I don't mean just here on Earth. I mean the whole thing, the whole shebang. This is the nature of reality. It doesn't have any size exactly. We can imagine it must be something huge, big. Yeah, but that's an idea we have. Maybe we have some beliefs about that. We think that these ideas are true that I've just gotten hold of here. And there we are again. We're back in the confusion. The subtlety with which we need to see the nature of this reality in terms of wholeness, totality, is there's no measurement for it. And again, this is not something you need to figure out. This is not something that you have to grasp as a concept or an idea or a belief or something like that. The Buddhas, the awakened ones, they don't believe in anything necessarily. I mean, of course, those of us who think that belief is something important and valuable and all this sort of thing, it must seem a little vacuous then. They don't believe in anything? We're seeing that wrongly. Because we could see that as well as just utter freedom. Awakening isn't tied to anything. It's not dependent on something else. Everything, you might notice is that unless we really wake up to this totality, everything else that we might have there to put in place, oh, I need this, I want this, this works for me, and all this kind of stuff, it leaves you dependent. It leaves you kind of wobbly, shaky. If that were taken away, or I can't find it again, or whatever it might be, it seems to fall apart. Well, that isn't really true after all, I found out after 20 years of following that. You know, depending on something else, that is shaky ground. And the confusion and the pain, the suffering, the dukkha that we experience in our lives is that we're constantly reaching for something like that, something that then we will be dependent on. You're not dependent on anything. Your actual experience here isn't dependent on anything whatsoever. That is why, that's why you seem to be having something in the first place, like an experience. But it's also very freeing, utterly freeing, totally freeing. And it has moral aspects to it that will allow you to live in a decent way and on this planet with other people and other creatures in a very peaceful way where we can allow the planet itself to heal. And, there you are. But can we take this then and set up a government to run this way? No, we really can't. It's for each one of us to come to this realization yourself. The Buddha said, the last words, be a light unto yourself. Betake yourself to no external refuge. Hold fast to the truth. Look not to refuge to anyone, anything beside yourself. Of course, he's not talking about your little ego self here now. The true self is this totality. And it's a matter of just realizing that, waking up to that, noticing that this is all you've ever experienced all along, it's just this. And don't allow yourself to just slide off into this real narrow, egoistic view of me and what I want. Now, I want to control all of them. I'll use them to get what I need over here if you're one of these cruel leaders. And of course, then we can blame them, we can curse them, we maybe raise armies to fight against them. There we are again. Or we can finally realize, yeah, that's how things, we carry on. You yourself, for each of us, just me here, right? What exactly, don't even try to define that. But it's with this realization, this awakening to the whole, to totality, it's not a thing. In fact, get rid of the word whole or totality. Get rid of all the words. No word will ever capture it. But it is a matter of giving some attention to what is actually being experienced in this moment. And stay within that vicinity. Can anybody walk this path perfectly? So we have this idea that a person wakes up and now they're an enlightened person. And then they maybe can just march on to the rest of life as an enlightened person. It doesn't work that way. It's a matter of each moment, come back. Don't lose sight of the whole. That's what it is. First of all, when we finally really catch sight of it, of course, we always have sight of it, so to speak. But again, we don't recognize it. We don't give any attention to it because it doesn't register as a thing, as an object, It's still showing me over here looking at it. It's transcending that in a sense. No words really work here. But this is, and how might we find, well, the best way, if you want to wake up to this, is don't go looking for something, because it's not enough. Don't try to figure it out. There's nothing to figure out here. It's like trying to figure out the taste of orange. You're not going to figure out the taste of orange juice. You don't need to. When you know it, no, it wasn't a matter of, you know, reading a description of it. And, you know, well, the same thing's there. I mean, you are having a true experience of reality all the time. How could you not be? That's all this ever is. That's all it ever was. But we keep looking for the thing we can get hold of, an idea, a thought, a feeling, something that'll make me feel safe and protected, and or it'll be the answer to my dreams, and all that. It's endless with us. We can just simply set those things down. Some of these things are useful. We'll pick them up, use them, you know, in a limited way, and then set them down again. But don't lose sight of the whole. When we realize we've lost sight of the whole, now we're back in kind of this ordinary reality where things are assailing us. And once you start getting a taste of this, you don't have to spend much time there anymore. Just make this effort to not lose sight of the whole. Well, I probably have talked too long already, so maybe I better stop. Any questions or comments? Yes. Are you John?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I was just trying to learn your name. I heard. Yeah, I just want to make sure that I got that right. I'm Steve, yes.
Hi.
Yeah, just, Well, just live your life, and again, try not to lose sight of wholeness, and don't be too bothered by trying to impress anybody or worrying about what people might think of you or any of these things. These things really aren't important. Once in a while, they could enter into some situation that, you know, but basically, these things don't really matter. You can't control that anyway. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Right next door. Okay.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, yeah. You know, your talk, thank you for your talk.
Yeah.
To kind of bounce off of John's comment in your talk, one of the things that I always get tripped up on is within the whole is the whole. I mean, it is the whole. And yet it seems as if some humans, some life forms, gravitate towards parts of the whole which are not really conducive to a harmonious or equilibrium-based way of life. They kind of gravitate towards areas that are a little more uncomfortable or a little more jaded or a little more self-driven. And then there are others that look at or that are in the whole, that are here, and they go, well, I guess I'd rather try to conduct myself in a way where I'm not creating tons of ripples and I'm not doing things that are actively going to be hurting somebody. And I always get so confused as to why there is that distinction of within this whole big realm of everything, What is it that would make a person gravitate towards those areas that are not conducive? And I thought about this for so long, I've kind of given up and just been like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I might never know.
Yeah.
And all I can say at this point is it's a combination of 18 million factors
or maybe one.
Never knew.
Yeah, I think it's just one factor really that you need to focus on. It's just one factor I think that you need to
tell me.
Yeah, I will. But in general, we don't understand. Most people are very confused about consciousness, about mind. And this is ties it. This is totality, wholeness right there. But with this factor of consciousness, which is directly here, it's just like what orange juice, you taste it and you realize it. And of course, we do taste consciousness. And most of us aren't really too lost about that, that we might realize that at some point pretty early on. But it's this factor of, and that's really just breaking this wholeness out into various things. So it's just dividing it all up as if the whole itself is seamless. There aren't any divisions or separations at all. It's not even an object. It doesn't separate itself from anything. It's totality. But there's this aspect of it which is fracturing things out into this and that, the appearances of this and that. That's consciousness. That's what it is. It isn't something being produced by my brain. We're so far down the road of grasping all kinds of levels of thingness and, you know, structures and things like that, believing it's all real, that we're confused about this. But if we just get all the way back to what's really taking place here, well, this seamless reality, and there's ways of noticing that it is seamless, and yet at the same time it seems to have all kinds of seams and divisions and separations and all of this. These are appearances. And with the dominant one is, well, here I am. In other words, all that out there. So that's like the first thing with consciousness, that's the first thing that appears to be separated out. And now within this then, is you have this sense of self. And of course, there's things we kind of like, and there's things we don't like, and there's this leaning of mind that starts to take place. And to the extent that, you know, we're caught up in our own self here, this is the one thing that we can begin to pay attention to. I wrote about this in Buddhism Plain and Simple. We call it leaning of mind there. But this is, and the Buddha identified this as intention. This is the one thing that the awakened people avoid. They don't lose sight of the whole, and that's the same thing as not being caught by this leaning of mind or intending to go this way or that, or, you know, it's just simply be present with what is taking place. And all of those things that appear to be changing and flowing and moving in different ways, you can't control that anyway. You can't even control the things that would seem to be myself here. I'd like to stop myself from aging, say. Well, I haven't been able to do that, you know. But that's what this is. It isn't that something is causing something, like there's something causing consciousness or consciousness is causing things to appear to be different. No, there's the wholeness. That's an aspect of this wholeness that we can realize directly, that it is of this nature. The whole thing is right there at once. But it looks like this. It looks like coming. It looks like going. It looks like this and it looks like that. It looks like now and it looks like then. All this sort of thing. But that's what consciousness is. It's just the apparent division of this seamless wholeness, which doesn't even have any size, into the various things. And then with this initial thing that we have, well, there's me here in this picture. Yeah, well, now there's things I kind of like, and there's things I don't. And we start acting out of this and building systems, you know, to accommodate this or to fight against that. And that's the thing to be watching for. Rather than trying to make yourself go a certain way or be a better person or do all of this. Yeah, these are fine things, you know. Well, they may be, they may not be. But the thing is, what the awakening have learned to do is just watch that leaning mind. And when you can find that. That's not that difficult to find. You realize you're trying to bring about these results. That's what these banded bug rulers, you know, are like. That they're trying to control everything. That's the bad government we see today. It's from people trying to, you know, force this or force that. Though we can come together, because we aren't all awakened, yeah, we do probably need some laws. You know, and a democratic government is, a republic is very good in this way. Because we do need the republic, okay, because we need the laws, you know. And the democratic way of arriving at this, we're kind of by agreement. And very often, well, maybe always, I don't know, when it's thrown out there to everyone, and then we can all vote. Generally, the choices made are the wise ones. But you yourself as an individual, you can only go so far with that. Don't push it too hard. You can offer your opinion or your thoughts on this or that. That's fine. But to demand and try to steer it and make it go the way I think, or band together with the few you might gather around you who think the same way about this issue. You might discover you don't agree about everything, though. But there's our problem again. So it's a matter of just realizing the nature of the whole. Keep your eye on that and notice yourself when you're deviating from that in some way. And just simply don't go too far with that. If we can get better at seeing how, I'm trying to, again, that's how I didn't choose to start Dharma Field or to make it or whatever. It didn't really come out of people showing up at my door literally, and eventually we started having group meetings and things. But at no point did I try to bring about what we have here now, but it was just a matter of responding to what was going on with the people that were showing up and that sort of thing. And so things will still happen, things can happen. But drive it too much from your ego, or what I want, or what I think we should do. Now we're going to have the kind of human conflict and problems that we think keep cropping up everywhere. But this is why such problems crop up. We lose sight of the whole. So it's a matter of just learning to live out of that. And more we can get maybe better at that than... And eventually our own sense of what I want, that it can get pretty weak, so it's almost as if it drops away. I don't know that it ever really totally drops off, but I think in instances it can, yeah. Yeah. So it's a dropping away of body and mind, as Dogen speaks of it. That's what this practice is. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else? Anyone out in Zoom land? No? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.